Hey guys, we are here on the Datewell Men set. If you're listening, you should probably stop, go to YouTube and watch so you can see how awesome this set is. But today we're really excited because we're gonna be talking with Joshua Broom. He's got a crazy story into the porn industry, over 1,000 videos that he was the star in, winning accolades and awards in the porn industry, and then got out of the porn industry, found the Lord, crazy transformation, and really just dissects and unpacks the impact that that lifestyle had on him and what he's doing now.
Yeah, he shares how he overcame depression, battling thoughts of suicide, and just the emotional scars that come with doing over 1,000 pornography films. But he is now the founder of a nonprofit organization called Finding Hope. He's married to a beautiful wife of 6 years, has 3 boys. So you're gonna want to hear his story and what the power of the cross has done in his life.
Yeah, so today's all about bringing hope. Today's all about breaking shame and giving you more tools to get free and helping you set others free.
Enjoy. Awesome, Joshua, we're so thankful and grateful to have you here with us today.
Yeah, we are.
And I hate to admit, I already said this to you ahead of time. I wish I knew more about you because the little bit that I knew just getting ready for the podcast, I'm like, oh yeah, babe, I should have known him way earlier. But just love even the stuff I'm getting to see. Can't wait to dive into conversations. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, like I was saying, I'm absolutely glad to be here. Huge fan of all you guys do. I'm so thankful that you do it with excellence. And yeah, I'm just glad to be part of this community of people who care, that we're not afraid to talk about difficult things, and we're willing to lean into something that is so dark and so prevalent.
Yeah, definitely. And that's our heart, is it is dark and prevalent. And yet we try to, hey, wait a sec, guys, God created this. So it's being experienced dark, but we were going to talk about the light and talk about redemption, which is what I love about your story. Before we even get into the story of the past, love for our audience just to hear who you are. What do you do? Where are you pastoring? What are you leading? What are the things that you're going after?
Yeah, so I've spent the last 3.5-4 years being on staff at a few different churches. And most recently, my wife and I, we have created a ministry. It's called Finding Hope. And we want to equip people to walk in freedom, and that we believe that that is found in a relationship with Jesus Christ. So that's our primary efforts. I have a podcast called Counterfeit Culture that is comparing, you know, what is the lie that is the porn industry and many other lies in society, and the very countercultural viewpoint being the Bible, being the final and the authoritative piece of truth that we can look to, and we can compare and contrast what's real and what's counterfeit.
Yeah, that's amazing. Wow. That always gets me going, because we just started, we have these t-shirts and sweatshirts that say porn is lying to you. So I love what you even just said, like the lie that is porn.
Yeah.
That's just like a truth that we're trying to proclaim right now.
Yes. Yeah. And so we're so excited, listeners, or if you're watching on YouTube today, we are about to dive into what is such a powerful story. And even hearing the name of your nonprofit now, Finding Hope, I'm like, I just love it, because knowing your story, knowing how you found hope, it is just such a beautiful picture of how hope is possible for anybody, anywhere, anytime. So would you just start to dive in with us a little bit on what is your backstory? What did you need to find hope from?
Yeah, so I grew up in a fatherless home. And it was pretty unique because my dad was in proximity to where I lived. So it created this strange dynamic, because I grew up in this small town in South Carolina, yet my dad he was my father, but I never had a relationship with him. I knew what he looked like. I knew his name. But my mom had me when she was 16. He just chose not to fill the role as a dad. And that growing up, you know, seeing him in grocery stores, seeing him, you know, in town, it was confusing. And it created this this very unhealthy balance in me, because I'm someone who's very high achiever, but someone that has a high achiever personality, and they believe the lie that they need to earn their worth. They need to perform, outperform, to, you know, receive that validation.
Yeah.
It was very toxic in my life because I had to be the best. I had to get the girl. I had to, you know, make the best grades. I had to be the best in sports. And that momentary validation, it's for a moment. And then I found myself empty and confused and angry. And that continued through college. And as I was having some success in the modeling and acting industry, I thought, well, if I put myself in closer proximity to the industry I want to be in, you know, it would be easy. So I decided that I would just move to Hollywood. So I dropped out of college.
You're the first person to ever have that idea.
Yeah. Yeah. My story is pretty arbitrary until a moment. But yeah, I moved to Hollywood. I get an agent. I believe like everything's going to go great. I land a few roles. Everything's going well. But the problem is I was not like equipped to move there financially. I didn't have this, you know, I didn't have a plan. I didn't have a ton of savings.
You're also the first person to not have a plan or not have savings to go there to become famous.
Right. Yeah. I'm chasing my dream without a plan.
I love it though.
But, yeah. But I get out there and things are going okay. And then like, you know, my story, like most people who move to that area, I have to get a job. So I'm working at, you know, at a restaurant. I'm waiting tables. And while I'm working there, in walk a group of girls and they say, hey, are you interested in being an actor? And me being in that industry for quite some time, I knew that if someone invited you to set, invited you to meet with maybe a casting director or be part of a project that they were working on, that was often the way that you got your in.
Yeah, sure.
And so I was like, yeah, absolutely. You know,
it's a break.
Yeah, it's my break. Here's, you know, I had my reel, like, you know, on my phone. I had a comp card like in my backpack somewhere. I was always ready. And then they're like, no, we're talking about porn. And I was just like, okay. Like, well, and I was so confused because, you know, this was like 2006, 2007. So, internet, you know, going, but like, it's not what it, like is it now. Was now. Right.
Yeah, right.
So I had seen, I'd seen pornography like in a magazine and maybe like a few, like, you know, a few things, a few times, like on the internet, but not like I wasn't watching it regularly.
Back when porn was two people in missionary position, probably.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was. And I was taken back because for me, it was like this thing that was a fantasy was now put in front of me and there were people inviting me into it. And I was both intrigued and confused and a little scared because I didn't think that this like someone, this is something I talk about very often where if you view a person as a product, you don't have, you know, there's not a lot of guilt for abusing them in that way. There's not like, to use someone. So if I'm using a person like a product, I'm going to use a product and I'm not going to think twice about it. So that's my relationship. You exist for me to consume you. And so I was seeing these people and they were saying that they were in the porn industry and they were inviting me into it. And I was like, how are you real? Like, this is what you do for a living. Like you're living, breathing people inviting me into this space. And it just created this, just, I don't know how I can't really even like articulate how I felt, but I was like intrigued to the point where like, sure, I'll meet with your agent. So that's ultimately what they invited me into. They invited me to meet with their agent and I go, and I assume that it's going to be super sketchy. I thought it was going to be like in this, you know, motel in the middle of nowhere.
Sure.
And, you know, there's going to be a weird guy like picking lint out of his belly button. And I was just going to run. You know? that's what I thought. And then I get there and it's in a really nice, like business, you know, complex. It's adjacent to where Universal Studios is. I go into this private garage and there's Beamers and Bentleys and all this stuff. And I go up this private elevator and I walk down this hallway then I open the door and there's this gentleman sitting there at a desk, three-piece suit, like giant, like double Windsor tie. And he's an English guy. He's got an English accent. And he just asked me like a few live questions. Like, how did you grow up? Why did you move to Hollywood? What is your objective in being here? And in retrospect, I gave him a lot of ammunition to manipulate me with, because I was like, well, I just grew up with just me and my mom, and I'm out here trying to act and I want to be famous.
Told him everything he wanted to hear.
Right. And he was like, okay, perfect. So here's the deal. There's not a ton of good looking guys in the industry. The industry is shifting. We're going to do parodies. There's going to be big budget movies with scripts, and you having acting experience and ability is going to be advantageous for you, because you'll be able to be the lead role in all these films because you're good looking and you can act. So if you can do the job, you'll be as famous as you want to be. And I'm hearing this, and just to provide some more context, because man, I was very promiscuous. I was in trouble sometimes. I just did not know who I was. And I was living my life to perform for people. And I was someone who, I call it the first date mask, where I didn't know who I was, but whoever you wanted me to be so that you would accept or affirm me, that's who I was. Because I had no clue who I was. And I didn't have a lot of belief in myself.
Yeah.
So I hear this and I instantly hear, well, maybe, you know, you've been trying to make it as an actor since you were 13 years old. That was almost 10 years. You've almost been doing this for 10 years. And the people around you, they're booking large productions. They're on TV shows. They're doing so much better than you. Maybe you're just not good enough. Maybe. Just maybe this is your big break. Maybe this is as close as you're going to get. Maybe this counterfeit version of your dream is as good as your worth. So maybe you should just do that.
Wow.
And I say yes. So I'm saying, okay, I'll do one. And I naively thought, okay, if I do one film, how bad could it be? How much pain could it cause? I didn't think for a moment it would impact my life.
Sure.
I show up to set, I sign this piece of paper they slid across the table that said, hey, this is how you get paid. I would love to come back and talk about that piece of paper. That's something I'm very passionate about as far as consent. But I signed this piece of paper. And then they're like, okay, come on back here. And I'm thinking they're going to give me a video camera and I'm going to go in a back room or something. I walk onto a legitimate set. There's catering. There's camera A, camera B, camera C. There's someone shooting BTS. There's a lot going on. And someone, a stagehand comes up to me. He's like, hey, here's a Viagra. Here's this little blue pill. Take it if you want. Don't, if you don't, it's in your hand. It's yours. We'll need you in about 25, 30 minutes. And I'm like, what does that even mean? Like, no one's going to like tell me what to do. No one's going to like ask me like questions. There's just this like small stadium lighting around this ottoman. And there's a girl on it that I can't even see because there's cameras around her. And then I'm supposed to go over there. I'm supposed to take this pill and go over there. And I'm like, like a typical movie scene where it's like, I'm in this movie. I'm in this like bathroom and I'm giving myself this like, not pep talk, but like, I'm asking myself, do I want to do this? Why am I here? Should I leave? And it was almost like strategic to the point where I saw that the way that I was there, it didn't really allow me to say no or change my mind. Really, I could have. I absolutely could have, but I signed this piece of paper that I didn't really understand what it meant.
Yeah.
There was a town car that come and they picked me up and brought me there.
They're making you feel like a movie star. Like they're making you feel like you got where you wanted to be.
100%. And then I'm in this moment and I'm feeling like a kid at a sleepover that wants to go home. Right. That I'm embarrassed because what I would have to do to leave there is I would have to go, I would have to call that agent and say, hey, I changed my mind. I want to go home. And for me, I believed that I'd gone so far that my pride and I guess my fear of that conversation didn't allow me to say no when I wanted to say no. And I believed I'd went too far. So that small compromise led to a larger compromise. And I took the pill, walked on set, and I did that film. And I didn't really think much about it. I felt, you know, I thought it was disgusting. I felt dirty. It wasn't anything remotely close to intimacy or sex in any capacity that I've ever experienced in my life. And I'm just thinking, okay, I'm definitely not going to do that again. And a few weeks pass, and unbeknownst to me, this video that I did, it had gone viral. At the time, that was like 500,000 views, you know, like 500,000 views, you know, 2006, 2007, it's gone viral. Everyone has seen it. And then everyone has seen it in that additionally, somehow it made its way to my agent. So obviously this is a breach in my contract. I can't represent myself this way. I have this really awkward conversation with them, get let go. Within hours, people are calling me, texting me. And then even my mom calls me and she's like, I heard from your uncle that someone told him that you did a porn. Is that true? And I'm just humiliated. I'm humiliated. And then within, you know, a day or two, all these people have saw this and it's everywhere. And my life as I knew it was drastically changing. Yeah. And then I was kind of dating someone at the restaurant I was working at. And I mean, we weren't like engaged or anything like that, but we were exclusively dating. And I'm like, man, I got to tell her. And I told her, and she was the nucleus of many of my friendships. And like, she had worked at that restaurant for a long time. And she was a very respected dancer. So she had been in like music videos and stuff like that. And like worked in a dance studio, very respected. And, you know, I hurt her and like, I'm this, you know, this terrible guy, and her friends are mad at me. And just like, I'm like, gosh, like, what am I going to do? Like, this was I didn't have a plan B.
On this part of your story, it's so intriguing to me, because all of these people that are having this negative response to you being in a porn, are they Christians?
So it's funny you say that. So I, in retrospect, I don't know if I knew that at the time, but my family, yes, this girl, yes. But I think it was something that I was kind of oblivious to, not really the reason that they were responding like that. I just knew it was wrong. And to be honest, I would have, if someone would have asked me directly, are you a Christian? I probably would have said yes, because I grew up going to church.
Sure.
And I believe that I checked the boxes. I believe that God was real. I believe that God created everything, including me. And I believe that Jesus like existed. So like for me, that acknowledgement equated to me being a Christian, whatever that meant to me in my mind at the time, like that's where I was.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that happens. We had this, you know, this fallout, and then like, okay, I can't work here anymore. So I quit that job. I'm like, I'm like literally like from Genesis 2 to Genesis 3, where it's like, I'm walking, there's no shame, sin enters the picture, I'm hiding from everyone, and I'm trying my best to cover up, you know, my sin. And it's like, I didn't know what to do. And I was like, okay, I don't have an agent. I'm not like that well known. Like no one's like beating down my door for me to like do anything.
Well, I know what the devil gave you the opportunity to replace everything you just lost, I bet.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And then right on time, that agent calls and he's like, hey, I want to give you a contract, and I'm going to make you, you know, my highest paid guy. I've, you know, all this stuff. And I went from I'll never do that again, to saying, okay. And then that happened, and that led to me being in the industry for over 6 years. I did over 1,000 films. I was nominated for 18 different awards, won a bunch of them, one being Male Performer of the Year. And for me, like, as someone who was very data-driven, very achiever personality, for me, I had these goals. And once I met these goals, I believed the lie that that would equate to happiness.
Yeah.
So, you know, if once I had been surfing in Costa Rica, and once I've, you know, it took a private tour at the Louvre, and once I made over $1 million, and the final straw in my cap was once I won Male Performer of the Year, because essentially that's the pinnacle of success in that industry. Oh. And when I won it, it was very much like, okay, you know, if you gave, like, anyone, if anyone listening to this, if you believe, if you have this home, you'll be happy, or you believe once you get married, good. You know, your the struggle with porn will go away. Once you become a father,
so
you know, your an inadequacy because you didn't have a father is going to go away. You know, once you get the job, this secret addiction is going to go away. You know, once you get married, the loneliness is going to go away. Whatever it is, it's if there's a root that is the cause of this pain or this anguish, covering it up with something is only going to, best case scenario, make it lie dormant. So for me, I won that award instantaneously. It wrecked me because it didn't work. The money didn't work. The travel didn't work. The awards didn't work. Nothing worked.
Wow.
And I have this, and I went from feeling excited to a depression so deep and so dark. Wow. Every single time I worked for about 3 months, I was strategically trying to figure out, how can I take my life? Because I don't have the guts to harm myself in this way. But what can I do? Because there's no way that I'll ever be a father. There's no way I'll ever contribute in any capacity. No one's going to want me to create something. So for me, like, I live to create something that impacts someone in a positive way. Like, that is what fires me up.
Wow.
So it's like something like, if I can serve someone, that it unlocks something in them so that they can do something they never believed they could do, or experience something they never believed they could experience. Like, that's what I live for. And I was like, there's no way that I can do that, because no one's ever going to take me seriously. Mm-hmm. Never. I'll never be a dad. I'll never be a husband. I'm worthless. My life is over. I don't see a future worth living. Wow, so I'm seriously thinking about ending my life. And this, like, the last movie that I did, I was going to go put that check in the bank. And there was just this, I don't know why, that, like, I was just like, I got to get this check in the bank, and then I'm going to do this. And I go to put the check in the bank, and normally I would use ATM, Dropbox, whatever, because I didn't want to have an actual interaction with someone, because the memo on the check said what the movie was. It was descriptive, and it was grotesque.
Wow.
And I was humiliated by that. So I didn't want to look someone in the eye and slide, you know, a check across the counter. It's like, yeah, I got paid to do this.
Yeah.
So, but one day, that was the only way I could deposit the check. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to face the music. It doesn't matter anyway. And I give her the check. She does, you know, all the stuff, and she puts it in there, and she hands me the receipt, and I pivot to walk away. And then she says, Joshua, are you okay? Joshua, is there something I can do for you? And the power in that.
Wow. That, the bank teller.
But the power in that was that, so if you are living your life in a way that you know is less than your ability, capability, calling in life, regardless, Christian or not, if you're living your life in a way that you know that you're not proud of the way you're living, the thing that hurts the most is for someone that truly knows you to look you in the eye and say, I love you, but you're better than that. Mm-hmm. I love you, but there's so much more that you can do with your life. And that was my mom every single day, never affirming anything I did, but relentlessly pursuing me with her love. And I couldn't face that. So anyone that's experiencing that, you're going to do one or two things. You're going to stop doing what you're doing, or you're going to push everyone away. Mm. I pushed everyone away. I unfriended people on social media. I didn't answer texts or calls. So at this point in my life, it had been about a year. I had not talked to anyone in my family, anyone that truly knew me. And I had not even heard my real name, because there's a level of shame that goes along with being in the industry, in the porn industry, because you go by a pseudonym. You don't even go by your real name. Like, if that doesn't display the level of shame where the people are saying, I love what I do, this is amazing, this is who I am, it's not even who you are, because you go by a pseudonym, because there's a level of shame that's associated with that. Wow. So that's who I was. I had became this, you know, I had created a plausible reality based on a lie.
And it was
so thick and so ingrained in my head. I hadn't even heard my name and I didn't know who I was. But when that bank teller said my name, it absolutely wrecked me. Chills in my arms right now. Yeah. But like, I remember just like it taking my breath and me not really answering her and walking away. And at this time, I was living in Sherman Oaks, and where I lived in this galleria that was that had apartments attached to it. And I walked across the street, like from the bank, and just like fighting off tears. And as soon as I, you know, got in there, I just like fell on the ground, just like weeping. And I was just like, for me, the main thing I was thinking, I was like, I cannot believe that I had robbed my mother from just knowing that I'm okay, because she didn't want me to change something necessarily. She just wanted me to answer the phone and know that I was okay. And I was robbing her from that. Mm. So after I pulled myself together, I called my mom and had this like really tough conversation and apologized for hurting her and apologized for not letting her know I was okay. And she was like, I don't care. I love you. Just come home. And I said, okay. And then after that, I picked up the phone, called my agent. I quit, called everyone I needed to call. I put out a press release and I quit. And I wish that my story went up from there. But from there, I go back home and I start lying to every single person I meet. I lie until I get found out, because I covered up my tattoos. I deleted my social media. I believed that I could just cover up these thousand movies that I did and no one was going to know the wiser. But the reality is, on the outside looking in, even though I quit the industry, I just won this award, and anyone that was, you know, in the know about pornography, I was one of the most famous guys in that industry. What the heck are you doing here? Not living out that life. Like, you're that guy, you're that guy, you're that guy. I was working at Whole Foods and I was working at a gym, and, you know, I was just trying to live this normal life. And all I wanted to do was not be this porn star and not be associated with that anyway. Mm. I just wanted it to go away. And there was about 2 years of me lying until I got found out. And I started work, and I had a lot of success in the gym, just who I am. It's like, whatever I'm going to do, for good or for bad, I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. And I'm going to find a way to win. So I was like, okay, I'm going to take this mentality to the gym. Became educated in health and fitness. Really got plugged in with people, found out that my ability to communicate had some carryover in the gym. Started leading people to lead themselves, started training coaches how to coach, and had a lot of success, you know, from that standpoint. But still, like, having night terrors at night, still looking over my shoulder. Every time I met a new person, I was terrified, because it was only a moment, you know, a moment of time before they knew who I was. And then this girl comes in the gym and I'm like, all right, she's gorgeous. I'm going to ask her out on a date. And I ask her if I can take her to dinner. And she says no. And I was like, no, I'm in love. You know? I'm like, oh my goodness.
Have you seen my face? What?
I was like, come on. You know, and just like there was just something about her. Like she, like everything she did, it was like, I don't know. I mean, obviously I was awestruck by her, but just everything she did was just beautiful and whimsical, and the way that she carried herself, she like respected herself. She didn't, you know, she dressed like far more modestly than most people that would, you know, be in this gym, but yet she was like the best athlete and the prettiest and all this stuff. And I just wanted to get to know her. And I mean, to be transparent, my intentions were not good. I was like, I just want to know this person. I want to, you know, whatever. And she was like, okay, well, we can go on a run. And I was like, not really my thing, but to spend time with you, absolutely. I will run for you so that I can spend time with you. And we go, she wants me to meet her at this park. And I get there early and I'm waiting on her to get there. And I just feel this like overwhelming, like almost like lump in my throat, like I'm in trouble. Like, and I started to think, like, she hasn't done anything to me. And I think so highly of her. How could I potentially hurt her like I've hurt several people who I said that I cared about in my life by withholding the truth? Mm. And I'm like, she's probably going to tell me to take a hike. She's probably not going to want anything to do with me if I tell her the truth. But I'm going to tell her the truth. And wow. We go on this, well, we meant to go on a run, but it never became a run. It was a walk from the beginning. And we were just talking. I was like, hey, I want to let you know something. I did a little bit of porn. She was like, what?
And I like how you said a little bit.
Yeah. And then she was just like, so confused, like not like I had said something offensive, like so confused at what I just said.
She's like, with that face, who would let you on a porn movie?
Oh my God.
But she was just like, what are you talking about? Like I'd said something just insane. And then I was like, okay, man up, tell the truth. Just like for once, just tell the truth. This is not about you.
Wow.
Tell the truth. And I laid it all out there. You know, I told her everything, and she looks at me like pretty like awestruck. And she's like, well, I did not expect to hear that. And then she pauses and ponders, and I can tell that she's processing. Mm-hmm. And she says, well, I want to tell you something. I believe that a person is not defined by the worst thing they've ever done. I also believe that a person is not defined by the greatest thing they'll ever accomplish. I believe that God defines who a person is. Do you know who God is? And then I very quickly put on my mask. I put on my, I want you to like me, so I'm going to say the right thing. And I'm like, yes, I believe that God is real. I went to church growing up. Yeah. And then she's like, okay, well, what does your relationship with Jesus look like? What does your prayer life look like? What, like, yeah, like, are you living this out? Is she's asking me. And, you know, I didn't know what to say. I was just like, I don't have any material to work with. I don't know. I don't have any context to, you know, contribute to your conversation. And I just, and then she's like, well, I gave my life to Jesus when I was in seventh grade. I've not been perfect by any means, but Jesus has been, you know, the most important thing in my life since then. My family is Christian. It's very important to me. But do you like, you know, tell me more about you. Do you like tacos? What's, you know, tell me about your family. And I was just like, you don't want me to leave?
Wow. Yeah, totally.
And it, there was something about that, like very like Colossians, like 4:6, you know, let your speech be gracious and seasoned. You might know how you ought to answer each person. And the way that she answered me was with boldness and confidence and not anything about who I was, about who Christ was. And she's like, hey, this is what I know. And what you said might be true, but that doesn't define you.
Wow.
God has already defined you. And That's what I think, and that's what I know. So it cultivated, again, this curiosity in me. But now this curiosity was leading me somewhere else. It wasn't leading me, you know, before my curiosity was leading me to meet with this, you know, this agent. Now this curiosity has led me to, my curiosity has led me to wanting to know more. Mm. And, you know, I ask her some more questions and we talk, and then, you know, we pretty much leave it at that. And then we, you know, we leave and we text all week. And then she's like, hey, this is not the church that I normally attend, but there's a lot of people that attend the gym that, go to this one specific church. Do you want to go to church this weekend? I was like, yeah. I was like, I want to know more. Let's go. And I just wanted to hang out with her too. And I get there and there's this like giant, like wooden plaque. And it says, we want to love people where they are and encourage them to grow in their relationship with Jesus Christ. And I was like, you know, I don't know if you know my story, but if you knew my story, you'd tell me to leave for sure. Mm. Like there's no way that you hear my story and you say that you want to love me where I'm at, because you don't know where I've been. And I go in and the people are nice. The music's cool. The, you know, from an aesthetic standpoint, like everything is awesome. And I sit down and I'm expecting, you know, this from my experience, I'm expecting this guy in a 3-piece suit to preach this message. And it's going to be stiff. And it's going to be legalistic. And it's going to, you know, tell me if I don't do X, Y, and Z, if there's a wrinkle in my shirt, I'm going to go to hell. Like,
yeah, totally. So
that's what I'm expecting to hear. And I see this guy in a t-shirt and jeans and boots that remind me of my grandfather talking about how Jesus has radically transformed his life. And he has this personal relationship with him. Yeah. And he was never good enough and will never be good enough, but because of what Jesus has done on his behalf, he can have have just reconciliation with God in a new perspective and a new mind. And he starts telling the story about Mephibosheth and how, you know, he was the last remaining member of Jonathan's family. And when David took over, it's in 1 Samuel, but when David took over, he could have, like kings in the past, go find anyone in the previous lineage and have them wiped out because I don't want them to think they have access to this kingdom.
Yeah.
David was different. He said, go find Mephibosheth because I actually want to take care of him. So the guard finds him. David invites him into his home, gives him a seat at his table, restores his land, does all this stuff for him.
Beautiful story.
Beautiful, beautiful story. And what it allowed me to see was the heart of God.
Yeah.
Because for me, I saw God through the incorrect lens of my experience. I saw the Father as someone who I could not be good enough because my Father didn't want me.
Yeah.
And I saw myself as inadequate because of my mistakes. And then he shared the gospel, and that, you know, Romans 3:23 tells us that we've all sinned and we fall short of God's perfect standard. And then Romans 6:23 says that not only is everyone guilty, that guilt, it makes us deserving of death because the wages of sin is death.
Yeah.
So if we're all guilty and we all are, you know, impending this death that's coming to us, this eternal separation from God.
Yeah.
If there's a bridge that we need that we can't build ourselves, what are we to do? And then talks about the perfection of Jesus, his sacrifice, and how his sacrifice and his life gives us access, gives us that bridge to gives us our purpose, our life, our salvation. And it just made sense to me in that moment. Like, that's awesome. I'd heard it before, but it made sense. Mm. And
came as revelation. Like the Holy Spirit was there to grab your attention finally.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I understand what's being said. Holy Spirit softens my heart. I give my life to Christ. And, you know, and then in that moment, like I'm weeping and I'm just like so thankful. But what I felt specifically, I tangibly felt this like pressure be relieved from me. And it wasn't the pressure of my guilt. It was the pressure of the belief that I had to perform to earn my worth. And I, you know, the Bible tells us that Jesus died for us when we were at our worst, when we're enemies of God, Jesus died for us. So Jesus died for me, not because I earned it or deserved it. He died for me because he loved me that much. And to know that I was worth that much to him, it changed everything for me. And what I love about that story is that girl that invited me to that space, her name is Hope, and she's now my wife. We've been married for 6 years.
I thought you were going to go there.
I mean, I had to be with how much you were talking her up. I'm like, he can't be talking about some other woman being this beautiful.
I'd get slapped if I talked about her ex-girlfriend that way. So I had to be
But how amazing that her name is Hope. What? I did not see that coming. Yeah, this does sound like a movie, Joshua.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, 100%. So, I mean, finding Hope, our nonprofit. So my wife, her name is Hope. She led Beautiful. Me to the place where I heard the message of hope. Wow. And ironically, the church also was named Hope Community Church. Amazing. So kind of the trifecta of hope. But yeah, I mean,
wow. We're going to have to meet Hope. We're going to have to, the four of us are going to have to go to dinner. We got to meet the saint. The saint behind the new saint.
Yeah, she's the best. But what's so neat about that story is like we were talking about off camera, where it's like, it's so important for us, like, yes, like we all need saving. We all need help, you know, and it's like, if I give someone tools to experience a new life, so like salvation, instantaneous, you know, Holy Spirit softens your heart. You respond to the gospel. Your life is forever changed, signed, sealed, and delivered. But you still have these incorrect thought processes. You still have these bad habits. You still have these, you know, maybe these false like ideologies that you believe. And for me, what was so powerful is that same week, again, like because of my personality, like God redeemed, reshifted, and repurposed who I was in the same way, just in another direction. But I walk into a church and I'm like, hey, here's my story.
Porn star. Jesus love porn stars too? Because here I am.
I was like, I think God wants me to build a boat. And they were like, what? Like, can you explain that, you know, in church terms, you know, can you unpack that? And I was like, well, I think God has given me this story and he wants me to do something with it. It's bigger than I can comprehend. Wow. And all that I know is that if I want to do something that, if I want the ability to do something that I don't know how to do, I want to reach out to someone who knows more, has gone further, and ask a lot of questions. It's like, there's someone here that I can talk to. And they're like, absolutely. There's this gentleman down the hall. His name's Andrew. And he recently graduated from Dallas Theological Seminary. And he had moved here with his family. And they're going to help us plant another campus. And I go to meet with this guy. And he's supposed to, you know, just give me some context of how to read the Bible, just, you know, observation, interpretation, application. Like, this is how you read the Bible while understanding context. This is, you know, 30 minutes. This is what you need to get started. So I meet with him, and that 30 minutes turned into 3 hours, and that 3 hours turned into the last 8 years, him mentoring me. But for about 4.5 years, I met with him for 15 to 20 hours a week. And it went from, you know, him teaching me how to read the Bible to him teaching me how to teach the Bible. He taught me, you know, basic biblical Greek. But it's like,
basic biblical Greek.
like it's a thing. Yeah. Yes. 74 ways to conjugate verbs. But anyway,
sounds super basic.
Future perfect present super fantastic tense. But but we went through that. But then it's like, I really got this hunger to learn. So I ended up going to Liberty University to study Christian ministries focused in biblical theology. I would love to get my master's in theology. That's something I'm in pursuit of. But along the way, like, God started to open up doors for me to share my story. And I thought, okay, the first time I was going to share my story, like, on stage, it's like, okay, I'm going to write it out. You know, I want it to be a drama. You know, I want people to feel something. I want to make people cry. I want to make people laugh. I want to do all this stuff. And I wrote it out, and I thought I had this perfect performance for me to read and to, you know, to give to this audience and to, you know, emote some kind of emotion to get something for myself. And I was like, I want to tell this story for a reaction. And that's why I'm sitting there. It's like, I think God's giving this big story and it's going to impact people. And then I'm sitting there And I felt so nervous. I felt so nervous that I needed to perform. And I felt, you know, I had these like feelings creeping up in me that I hadn't had in a while. It was unhealthy. I felt that it was unhealthy. And once I stepped up to the mic in my notes, I just felt calm. I just felt calm. And then I heard God speak to me. And, you know, in my mind, I felt God saying, "You're enough."
Mm. Man, that's like from your childhood, from that achiever that have to win, that have to always accomplish, man. That's what the Lord was speaking directly to that, huh?
Yeah, and it was crazy. And then I literally flipped my notes over. I didn't even read them. I shared my story in about, I think I had 17 minutes to talk. I shared my story in like 5 or 6 minutes. And then I very probably poorly like shared the gospel the best that I could. But after leaving that platform and giving people the opportunity to accept Christ, I was like, man, there's nothing else I want to do.
Awesome.
Like in whatever capacity, whatever I just did, I want to do that.
Yeah.
And awesome. At that point, my wife and I, we had eventually opened our own gym. So we ended up owning two gyms, and this one gym, it was going really well. So financially we were good. We'd bought our first house and we had our first child at that point. And we're just like, man, like this is it. Like, I don't know what it's going to look like, but I want to do more of this. And we started transitioning out of the health and fitness space and doing more ministry. And I started doing more speaking engagements. And that was, I was like about four or five years ago, and just been, it's been doing that ever since.
All right. So, I mean, it's so incredible hearing all that. Thank you for just, seriously. I mean, the depth of what you just shared, the vulnerability, even just the fact, like, so hard for people to admit, you went 2 years of just lying to everybody.
Yeah.
Man, that's tough to just, now it's, I'm sure you've recorded it before, but now it's recorded for everybody forever to hear that. And I just love the transformation that's taken place. The thing I'd love to key in on for people to kind of even wrap things up a little bit is the transition where, you know, you're in the church, you read the line, you know, "We'll take you how you are," or whatever the exact line was. And you're like, "Well, no, you don't know my story. That can't be me." I think shame's a thing a lot of people deal with, you know, and shame where our mistakes are always the biggest mistakes that we view in our own mind, right? Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. I'm unforgivable, I'm unfixable, I'm unredeemable, everyone else is. How did you tackle that part of your life as you came to the Lord? You know, now you've got this beautiful picture, you've got this amazing wife, these kids, this ministry that God's anointed you with. But man, there was that period that you went through where you had to break the shame to be the man that you are, or really be the man, be who God has called you to be, to step into your identity. What were your steps of tackling shame to be the man you are today?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a process. But for me, the big thing was understanding truly what love is, because love is indicative of choice.
Wow. And
while Jesus didn't have to, he freely chose that he could have commanded a legion of angels to wipe everyone out, but yet he suffered and died and was humiliated. Why? Because he loved you, loved me. So he chose to love me in spite of what I've done. So understanding that I could not earn my love, I could not earn his love. So for me, like, that was so important, and just understanding if God chose to love me, I want to choose to love him. And what that looks like is me choosing him over my feelings, over my shame, over my guilt. And I had to understand, like, I had to get to know him. And for me, like, 2 Timothy 3:16 talks about all scriptures God breathed, and it's good for teaching, rebuking, and all that good stuff. But it's like this idea of reproof. I had to dismantle and destroy incorrect ideologies and thought processes that I had so that I could see myself as how God saw me.
Yeah.
I had to be able to see God for who he is. I had to be able to take those things and then reappropriate myself into the world. But for me, I had to believe that the Bible was true.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. So for me, it's like, I didn't believe the Bible was true because of, you know, the historicity of the Bible or how accurate it's been translated over time. I believe the Bible was true because Jesus had proven himself to be real to me. And then if you look at Jesus's life, it's historically documented that he was a real person. He really walked the earth. He was really perfect. He really died on a cross. He really rose again. And if that's true, I'm going to listen to the guy that says not a dot, not an iota of my word will pass away until it's all fulfilled. So I treat the Bible as inerrant and infallible. So if I trust that it's not going to mislead me in any way, and also I can trust where it's going to carry me and take me, I want to submit and surrender my life to him. So what that looks like on a practical basis is I need to take inventory of my life. Who and what is speaking into my life? And if it's not leading me into the direction that I want to go, I have to remove it.
Yeah.
For healthy things to grow, dead branches need to be cut off. They need to go. So anything that's in your life that's taking you back to where you didn't want to go or taking you back to, you know, the person you never wanted to be, those things have to be removed from your life. And that looks like maybe I need to delete some apps. Maybe I need to unfollow some people on social media. Maybe I don't need a smartphone at all. You know, those are some of those things that I personally had to do.
Yeah.
And then I had to get very drastic. I had to like put some very firm boundaries. I had to put some firm boundaries in my life because I didn't want to continue going the direction that I was going. Yeah. And for me, what really changed everything is understanding that I can only be as free as I am honest. And I had to get some people in my life.
What a statement. That's so powerful.
And I had to get some people in my life that I call them hot conversations, honest, open, and transparent. So once a week, there's someone that I have honest, open, transparent conversations with, and they love me enough to not do the thing that I've had people blowing smoke up my butt my whole life. Like I've had people, you're great, you're great, you're great. If you only have people in your life applauding you and then you don't have anyone challenging you, you should check your circle because you need criticism in a healthy way to grow. That for me, it's like I had to get to a place where I was willing to be honest with myself and with others. I had to do the hard work of removing the things that were in my life that were toxic, that were leading me in a direction I didn't want to go. And I had to create some relationships in my life where I want people to both encourage me and give me a kick in the butt when I need it.
Oh, it's so good.
That was awesome.
Mic drop.
Yeah.
Write it down. And I think, who are your hot people? That's probably not the best way to word it, but who are the people that you're going to have those hot conversations with? Honest, open, transparent. I love that.
That's great.
The accountability.
Well, man, thank you. Thanks for the practical. Thanks for your story. Tell our people, how do they watch you? How do they follow you?
How do they
get a hold of you?
How do they find hope?
You guys are doing? How do they find hope? Well, you know, find the hope you're off, not the hope you've already taken, but the hope that you're offering.
Yeah, she's taking. But so on social media, I am Joshua Broom is all my social media across the board. If it doesn't have a blue check mark, it's not me. A lot of fake accounts out there. And also to get in contact with me, my website is Joshua Broom. So Broom with an E. So joshuabroom.me. And then if you there's a contact form on there. If you want to get in contact with me about speaking engagements or you have any tough questions, myself or someone from my team will get in touch with you ASAP.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Man, thank you for being here. We are so honored. Love your story. So excited about what God's doing through you guys. Thanks for partnering with us.
Absolutely. Same here.